Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in. Hi, my amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in today. On today's episode, I'm going to dive into my story, the part where I entered jail for my up to 1 year sentence. After, you know, last week's episode, I told you about how I was supposed to get into a program and not go back into main population like I had whenever I was originally arrested. But the thing is that I had to take a drug test and I couldn't pee. And so I had to then come to the realization that I was about to spend at least 30 days in main population while pregnant. Before I jump into this part of my story, I just want to tell you that this has been quite a journey telling you all my story in such detail, and just hearing all of the feedback from all of you too has been amazing. And, you know, with telling my story, I'm embracing this major fear of people really seeing me and being out there essentially naked in front of the world, just letting it all out. And even though it's been difficult and scary at times, so scary that, you know, I felt at times that I shouldn't promote certain episodes out of fear of people knowing my inner thoughts around a lot of really hard things that I've gone through in my life. Embracing this fear and telling these stories has opened my eyes to so much about myself, about people, and about society at large. I'm learning that embracing my fears is something that I wish I had started doing like years ago, because there's nothing more empowering than telling your story and then being able to still have boundaries and living life the way I've always imagined living it. And when it comes to people, I was so used to being judged and ridiculed and made fun of and being told that I was never going to be good enough. I would never be anything. But what I'm learning through telling my stories is that there are amazing humans in this world that are there to support us no matter what we've done and no matter what we've been through. There is always good. I have met some of the most inspiring, wonderful, amazing humans from all across the world because I chose to finally trust myself and show up authentically as me. And now I'm attracting the right people into my life. I've also learned that there are more people out there who don't believe all the labels in society are true, who will be there and lift you up regardless. So I just wanted to say that, and I want to encourage you to take a moment today and think about what have you been through in your life. Write those moments down, moments that were pivotal in your life, whether it be bad, good, or even just indifferent. Write those out and then read them to yourself and then look at how far you've come. I guarantee you're going to walk away from that exercise feeling stronger and more confident in yourself. You'll see all those things that you've been through and had to conquer and overcome to be the person you are today. And man, my friends, that's strength and resilience. You can move forward in your life. You are strong and you are capable. So now let's dive into the next part of my story. So I'm not going to tell Ike from beginning to end here because there's a huge moment that happened at the end that I think deserves its own episode. today I'm going to tell you, you know, what it was like in there and what I had to, you know, keep learning about myself and accepting. You know, like I talked about in last week's episode too, it was about I am okay knowing that not everything is always going to go my way, right? I had to stop being so stubborn. I had to learn more how to look at other perspectives. So when I walked into jail, it wasn't like when I got arrested. I don't really remember the full scope of what it was like from sitting in the bullpen that, you know, with all the other women who had just turned themselves in or, you know, got sentenced that day. All I remember is all of a sudden, I guess just like poof, I'm up there in main population and I'm with all of these women who, you know, like I've mentioned before, like it was really scary. It was really fucking scary to walk in there knowing that I could possibly spend the next year of my life in this setting. And the setting was we all were dressed the same, right? We were in our jail outfits. And then you're given this like roll of like a blanket. I don't remember if we get pillows or not. I don't think so, though. I don't think there were pillows given. So, and then you're expected to sleep on, you know, this paper thin mat on a metal bed that's attached to the wall with someone else above you. And so you're assigned a cell, and then you have your cellmate in there with you. And the woman who I shared my cell with, I wasn't necessarily afraid of her, but it was almost like I was walking into college again. You know, when you have a roommate in college, but you don't really know them that well. And even though you may have, you know, in jail, you don't meet the person or have the opportunity. But I know whenever I was going to college, I talked to my dorm mate, you know, prior to going to college, and I was still nervous to meet her in person. So now when I'm walking into jail and I'm set up in that slightly the same scenario, right, because she was a stranger to me, but it's a million times more intense. Because number one, I don't know why she's here. I don't know what type of personality she's going to have. And here I am pregnant, walking into this room, probably shaking in fear. But she wasn't rude to me, you know. She welcomed me. She asked me questions. And she told me how things worked. I don't know how to explain this. So when you're in jail, it's a very structured system. So like you wake up at a certain time, you know, then you have to stand up and you get counted and then you come out and then you get to eat and then there's some free time. And then there's times where you can be on the phones. There's times when you shower, like it's all very structured. But let me just tell you about this food, okay? Like this amazed me, but it's literal slop. It's like you get like slop beans or like, you know, the bologna sandwiches are very common. In the morning, it's always oatmeal and it's just, ugh, like it's gross. And it would always give me a stomach ache. So it was hard for me to eat enough for myself, let alone the baby that was growing inside of me in this process. And when you're pregnant in jail, it's not as if you get to just like get up and get a snack or get something to drink or, you know, go take a nap. Like there's, you're literally not treated any differently than the other women. I don't believe I had prenatal vitamins when I was in county jail. I remember going to see a doctor there, but it was very uncomfortable. And so I, knowing that I was going to get out and go to this work release program. And at some point, I opted to not go and get a sonogram while shackled. I just thought, you know, that would make sense. And, you know, I remember going back to my cell and my cellmate was asking me if I could smuggle tobacco at my appointment. So I literally was being asked in this moment if I was willing to risk everything. Because, yeah, I'm in jail, can't get much worse, but it can if you get caught doing something like that. To take tobacco from an anonymous person and put it up inside of me and bring it into jail. And I remember, like, thinking, oh my gosh, like, this is it. I'm going to get beat up. But I told her, you know, I'm not doing that. And I explained what I just explained to you. And she literally told me that I was being a bad mom. And that if I didn't go and have this sonogram, that I was, you know, if there was something wrong with the baby, like I wouldn't know and all this stuff. But I stood my ground. I did not go and smuggle tobacco into jail. You know, and a lot of the being in was a blur. You know, I haven't fully thought of it on a deep, like, step-by-step level in a long time, you know. But I remember, was how can I get out of this place? What can I do? I remember making phone call after phone call after phone call every single day trying to get myself out of main population and into the program that I had been accepted into. And I'm freaking out all the time. I'm hungry. I'm scared. Now I feel like my cellmate doesn't like me anymore because I didn't bring the tobacco in. And I just really wanted out. And then there was, you know, the fact too that I wasn't able to see my son because I didn't want him to see me there. Because in work release, he'd see me in like a cafeteria, not through, you know, a window while in my jail clothes. So just day after day of not seeing him and just not knowing what was actually going on, I had lost all control of my life. Couldn't do anything. Couldn't get a job. I couldn't go and pick up my son and take him out. I couldn't go to the store and get that midnight snack I was craving. I had no control over anything anymore. I didn't get to make choices. None of us did. There were women in there on the phone crying every single day. There were women fighting on the phone every single day because we had no control over anything. We had to trust that the people we had on the outside were going to take care of things. And I had a really hard time accepting that. I was determined to get what I felt I deserved. I don't remember if I was in there for 30, 35, 32 days or whatever it was, but finally, I get the call that I'm getting to go to the work release program. Holy shit. You would have thought they were telling me I was being released. That's how excited I was. And going to the work release program, I was still scared, but by this point, I was pretty comfortable with the environment I was in. I learned a little bit about survival. I learned that, you know, apparently we shove tobacco up our butts and bring it into jail. Did not know that. So I was learning a lot of things that made it going from main population county jail into this now work release program that was like right next door that I was pretty confident that I would be okay. And it's a totally different atmosphere. You're still in jail. You know, you still don't have cell phones. You don't have freedom to just go around and do whatever you want. Like, you're very much in jail still. But if you got a job, you could go to work. But if you deviated going to work and then leaving early to go somewhere else, like, you could get sent back to county jail. So that was how, you know, you were kept. Well, that's how they tried to keep everybody from escaping or deviating or whatever. So, me being pregnant, I was pretty certain I wasn't going to be able to find a job, you know, because number one, a lot of people, you know, they, even though they don't discriminate, a lot of people aren't going to hire a pregnant woman. And then I had the other factor that I'm now a convicted felon who's incarcerated. So it's not as if I felt like, yay, I'm going to go and get a job and I'm going to change everything around. Like, I'm going to make this right. I still didn't feel like I had any control. But it wasn't necessarily the outside telling me I didn't have control like it was in main population county jail. It was more of the fears. You know, I live my whole life in fear of some sort. But the longer I was in jail, the longer I was, you know, in this program and not having my freedoms, the fear kept building upon itself because I didn't feel comfortable calling a place and asking if they were hiring because then the questions were going to get asked that I didn't want to answer. I was so afraid to tell people that I was a felon and that I was incarcerated still. And I'm pregnant. I was so ashamed of myself that I survived. I kept my head down. I didn't deviate. I didn't, at this point, I was following the straight and narrow. I was just getting out. But the fact of the matter was that I didn't know when I was getting out. And I needed to make friends. I needed people to talk to. So I would start talking to people and people would be friends with me. And, you know, it felt okay for a moment until the visits with my son weren't happening. I would get told he was coming and then no one would show up. The money was running out because I couldn't get a job. Couldn't do my laundry. I couldn't buy any snacks while I was out and about. I had nothing. I didn't have friends on the outside who were rooting for me. I had my mom, but, you know, she was the one who was supposed to bring my son to me and just stop. So I truly felt like I was alone in every sense of the word. I would grasp on to anybody because I just wanted to feel okay and that I wasn't so alone. And I made some friends and, you know, I remember one time I went out to volunteer because you could volunteer too. And so I went volunteering with a friend and, you know, she convinced me to, you know, deviate with her and all these things and do things that I shouldn't have been doing. Shouldn't have been doing them. But guess what? That ties into the fact that I still could not listen to myself because I just wanted someone to like me. Please. Somebody that I could go to. So I went along for the ride. You know, luckily, nothing ever came of it, but it was really scary. I just kept putting myself in these situations. I just kept doing it because of the people, and I wanted them to like me. And this whole time, I'm pregnant. So I think part of it was, you know, my pregnancy kept me grounded to the point where I wasn't, you know, I wasn't using drugs. I wasn't, you know, trying to like just jump ship and, you know, run away or anything because I knew I had a child that I needed to make sure it was taken care of, you know, and being in there, there's so many stories I could tell you, but I think it'd be more powerful for me just to let you know like what I learned. And, you know, I learned that, again, it solidified, like I'm not always going to get my way. You know, I couldn't pee. So I had to live through those days in main population in county jail. I couldn't control that and it didn't go my way. You know, I learned that, I mean, looking back on all the experiences and the, you know, the not following the rules and, you know, risking getting caught and doing all these things that I still needed to wake up and see what I was doing and learn to trust myself. But I was still pretty resilient. You know, I remember like thinking about, okay, I have this many days. How am I going to get through this many days without it feeling like an eternity? So I created like a ritual. So like every day I get up, I get a shower, I help out in the cafeteria. And then I would, you know, have a couple things that I would do and go to counseling. And, you know, at the end of the day, every single day I would read something from the Bible and write something in my journal. And that kept me, you know, on this, you know, I was doing it in shifts, you know, I was working and I wasn't paying attention to the time. So it went faster. Well, it didn't, but it felt like it went faster. So I have the ability to, you know, focus on, you know, okay, what can I do to make this easier on myself to get through this really hard time? I made friends. I'm capable of making friends. You know, obviously I must have been likable or no one would have talked to me. You know, and in next week's episode, I'm going to, you know, tell you the the end of this portion of my life. And then there's a few more stories, but then we're almost to current. So I can't wait to share, you know, my pivot point and what I did to truly step into loving and accepting myself. It wasn't easy. It wasn't like, you know, it happened overnight, and it's still a process. So I'm excited for that because I want to get to like that part so that you can know what it took to go through all these things and come out on the other side. So anyways, I kind of rambled there for a second. But tune in next week because I'm going to tell you about my pregnancy and the birth and all those things on that next week's episode. So my affirmations for you today are, I am resilient. I am resilient. I have the power to get through difficult times. I have the power to make it through difficult times. And the one I always say, I am enough. I am enough. Thank you so much again for listening today. And if you're really liking the Let Good Things In show, make sure to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts so that others can find me more easily. And just as a reminder to everyone listening, remember, you are stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine, regardless of your past. Make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the show, and I will talk to you all soon.